Aye, thank you. All right, hi, my name is, sorry?
You're taller than me.
Yes, I am. Hello, my name is John. Thank you for allowing me to share a small part of my story with you today. I was born in Scarborough General Hospital in 1972. I was raised in a middle-class family along with my two younger sisters in Brampton, Ontario. My father was an accountant at a large firm in Toronto, and my mother worked as a nurse at Peel Memorial Hospital. I had a good upbringing in a Christian family, no significant trauma to speak of. My parents took us on family vacations each year, and we spent the summers at our trailer in Peterborough. I spent my days riding my BMX bike, playing street hockey and Atari. Life was good. My teenage years were fairly typical as well. I had a small circle of friends, mostly from church. I'd go on road trips, I played baseball, I did your typical teenage things. I always needed to stay busy though. I had a hard time when I was alone with my thoughts. I was uncomfortable being alone. I found that my brain would never slow down, that it never quieted. My mind was always focusing on negative things, and it was draining. Around the age of 17, I started hanging out with a new crowd. This crowd was heavy into drinking. I started drinking too. I found that the alcohol would shut my brain off. It would silence the never-ending voices of negativity that kept me awake at night. I didn't know it then, but this would be the start of a 30-year career of alcohol abuse. Years of mental health issues that would cause my family much pain. I've been married for 28 years. I have two sons and one daughter. They have been my reason to get up each day. I've suffered with treatment-resistant depression for half my life. At times, my depression has been crippling. I've lost significant periods of time in my life due to this illness. I would lay in bed for months, not wanting to be around anyone, not able to work. I hated myself. I had no hope. I was lost. Over the years, I've seen countless doctors, therapists, psychologists, and psychiatrists regarding my mental health. Thank you. I've been labeled with treatment-resistant depression, attention deficit disorder, and bipolar 1. I've been prescribed countless drugs, undergone different treatment methods, and even had 13 sessions of electroconvulsive therapy, which is electrocution of the brain, all in hopes of giving me some relief to the never-ending feeling of impending doom. I would use alcohol, Percocets, marijuana, and even cough syrup to sedate me. I didn't think things could get worse, but they did. A little over a year ago, I had a very bad manic episode while my wife was on vacation with her sister. One evening after a day of drinking, I decided that I'd had enough. I tied a noose, strung it up in my basement, wrote a short... wrote a short apology letter and asked God to forgive me for what I was about to do. At the time, my oldest son was working with a company that cleaned up and removed suicide victims from their homes and delivered the bodies to the morgue. In that moment, before I took the plunge, I had a vision of my son receiving the address. Of our home at his next call. Can you imagine your son being called? Sorry about this.
That's okay.
Can you imagine your son being called to the scene of a suicide only to find out that it was yours? This thought was all that stopped me that day. I thank God for his goodness and mercy. I thank God that he intervened that day. I saw my doctor shortly afterwards. as I clearly needed more help. I was prescribed lithium in hopes of stabilizing my mood. About 10 days later, I began to have eye problems along with balance issues. I developed significant double vision. I've been told that due to years of alcohol abuse, the lithium I was prescribed had exacerbated something in my brain to cause permanent double vision. I now wear glasses where each lens is a prism that puts the two images together. I was off work again due to my mental health and vision problems. I hated myself, and my substance abuse just continued to get worse. I was home all day, and I just continued to drink and use more. I had no self-worth. I forgot that hope even existed, and the only thing I prayed for each day was death. While off on disability, my family doctor closed her practice due to health issues. It took me 4 months to find another doctor. In this time, I was unable to find anyone willing to provide medical updates to my insurance company. Without these updates, my disability pay was terminated. Unable to work and with no money coming into the house besides my wife's, we ended up putting our dream home up for sale. Not only was my mental health in ruins, but so was my wife's. She had spent the last year afraid to leave me alone in fear I might do something. She was now losing her dream home as well. Her mental health. Her mental health had deteriorated to the point that she feared we'd both end up in the hospital. Anyone who ends up in rehab generally has the rock bottom moment. Mine came when my wife, my faithful wife, 28 years, finally asked me for a separation. She followed up that request with, "I think you should consider a team challenge." I've only recently begun to thank God for that day. Something had to change sooner or later. Life couldn't continue on that path. Since coming to Team Challenge, I've been working on my relationship with God. I've been experiencing His mercy each day. Forgiven me, and I'm learning to forgive myself. Best of all, He's healing me as well. I haven't talked to my wife in 4 months. I don't know whether my marriage will survive, and I have no idea what the future looks like. But that being said, my mental health has been improving. My mood is stable, except for now. And I have much more hope for the future than I ever have. One of the first verses we learn here at Teen Challenge is Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to give you hope and a future. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. I believe this with all my heart, and I look forward to what He has in store for me." Thank you.
How are we doing for time? We're good?
Yeah.
So, hello, my name is Jason Buckley, but my friends have usually called me Buck or just Buckley. But that wasn't the case when I was younger. Loser, idiot, retard were many of the other extremely harsh names for a child that I was called throughout my younger school years. Even though I wasn't the smartest kid in school, I always tried what I thought was my best. Growing up, I had what I thought was a pretty decent childhood. Always playing sports, brand new equipment every year, growing up with two cottages, but hockey is what I excelled at the most. All in all, we looked like a happy family, my mom, dad, younger brother, and I, but that was not the case at all. All I remember is my parents never getting along, never doing stuff together as a family, always with one parent or the other, and they were always fighting. Little did I know that this would be the start of their very rocky, long-proceeded, extremely tense divorce. And while this was all happening in their world, they had absolutely no clue what was going on in my horrible, dark world. From the ages of 6 to 15, I was sexually abused and molested by my first friend that I had ever made in the subdivision we lived in by a disgusting person. At such a young age, I didn't know right from wrong, so I didn't know what to do and never told anyone because I felt no one would believe me. Who's going to believe a six-year-old about that happening to them, was what I always thought to myself over and over. This is also the reason why I started getting sexually active with girls at a very young age, 7 and 8 to be exact, which is when I lost my virginity to a girl that lived across the street. She was also from a very difficult home, and sometimes her mom and her would come over to our house to get away from their very abusive husband and spend nights there for safety. And the weird thing was that she was always the one to initiate it with me. This is stuff no child should be doing at such a young age like that, but it happened. I was craving my mother's love so much throughout all this turmoil and never getting it, and so was the girl across the street from her mother, but never getting it, that we would always hang out and have sex at a young age. And then finally with my first true girlfriend in grade 6. During my teen years, I took hockey pretty seriously, but the memories would always come back. I made the Oakville Rangers AA team and was a call-up player for the AAA team as well. I was playing with future NHL stars and didn't even know it, people like Sam Gagne and Jonathan Tavares. But I was also playing with my abuser. The more I tried to ignore the fact that I knew what would happen after these hockey games and practices, I finally exploded. I quit playing hockey on both teams. It was ripping me up inside, and the coaches from both teams knew something was up, but again, I couldn't bring myself the embarrassment to tell the truth. My hockey career was destroyed by one person. I still haven't been able to forgive him, and I can't right now in my life either. Maybe later on. In high school, my teen years, they were pretty much okay. I attended Oakville Trafalgar High School in Oakville. I wasn't the popular kid, but I also wasn't the unpopular kid. I was one of the drug dealing kids or always with some sort of dealer. I actually attended a fair amount of classes, but skipped many more. I always had friends in a bunch of different crews, so I associated with an array of different people, guys and girls. But there was one thing. My abuser attended the same school and was lurking around the corners. So I started smoking weed, as everyone did in my school, to forget my past. I had first tried it in grade 6 and 7, but stopped. Started back up in high school. I was the usual rebellious teenager, selling drugs, stealing my mom's car at night, getting suspended from school and school trips, and always getting into trouble. Every chance I got to rebel against something, I would. Little did I know, the drinking that I had started to do every weekend was the start of my downfall of life. I didn't really start drinking heavy until I went with my two best friends and this family to a trip to Trinidad. We spent 2 months down there traveling the small islands of Trinidad and Tobago with friends and family. When I got back, that's when cocaine really came into my life. I left the house living with my mom and moved in with my then girlfriend to our apartment. And that apartment was a straight up liquor and cocaine den. The next 2 years of my life were totally wasted. A daily repeat of drugs, work, and alcohol. She would then leave and disappear for weeks at a time with other guys. And again, I would be stuck in my lonely despair, looking after the bills in the apartment. She would later leave me for a 19-year-old drug dealer, and a few years later I found out that she had a child and quickly overdosed and died after that. Before coming to Teen Challenge, my life was a bit all over the place. When I got back from working out west on the pipelines in northern British Columbia, we had purchased a house in Hamilton, Ontario, and had our first beautiful baby girl. We named her Isla Jane Buckley. I had a very well-paying union job welding precast buildings and high-rises, but one thing was always lingering over my head, my past. If that had happened to me at such a young age, couldn't it happen to my beautiful baby girl? So I started drinking again, but much more this time. I would start off by hiding the beers in the basement, nursing my 3 beers upstairs all night. Every time I'd go to the basement to do whatever I had to do down there, I'd pound back a few and come back up. My wife had no clue what was going on or how bad my addiction had become. But I would still be hiding and drinking beer in the basement. Then I started drinking at work. My end of days was near and I didn't even know it. I thought I was okay, but my home life soon deteriorated. After drinking beer at work all day long, I would come home angry, impatient with life, and my depression kicked in with no end in sight. It was affecting everything in my life in every way possible. And for the most part, I was lying, mentally cheating with other women, and the one thing that hits me the most was I wasn't a good father or a true father to my beautiful daughter. I love her to the moon and back, but when I was at home with her, I wasn't really at home. I was in my own little world, always thinking about alcohol. This went on for years, and I finally made the surprise decision to my wife to transfer from my local union in Hamilton to the local union in London. I figured it would be there in London that everything would change and would be a fresh start for me. I couldn't have been more wrong. After the birth of my beautiful boy, Watson, my drinking had totally become out of control. I was making God's amount of money welding and building the Amazon warehouse in St. Thomas, but also drinking 25 to 30 tall boys a day at work. Nobody knew a thing because I had it down to a science. It was when I got my first DUI, everything came out into the open, to my family at home and my extended family in Hamilton. I attended Alcoholics Anonymous for a few months, but never really found it that helpful. When I got my license back 3 months later, I was working in Kitchener building another high-rise when my life came crashing down before my eyes. I got my second DUI. My wife didn't know who I was anymore, and neither did I. Everything was a lie to her in our world. I wasn't the same Jason as I was when we got married. I was a terrible, lying, conniving, secretive, depressed Jason she never wanted to see again. This is when I had hit my lowest rock bottom ever in my life. I lost my job, my wife, my kids, and my house. I had nowhere to go and no one wanted anything to do with me. The suicidal thoughts in my head were raging. I felt worthless, like absolutely nothing. No one wanted me and no one loved me, and I couldn't see my precious kids. I started to self-harm severely and figured if I was dead, everything and everyone would be happy I was gone. No more having to worry about Jason. I ruined everything in my life, and if I died, everyone would be set free. After I got kicked out of my mom's house, my gracious aunt and uncle took me under their wing and let me move with them up in Keswick. They're a beautiful Christian family and very godly people. He's also the one who told me about Teen Challenge, as he worked at the Women's Center in Aurora for 16 years. I kept declining. My drinking also took off there more because, one, there was an LCBO not even a 5-minute walk from the house. Two, I wasn't allowed to see my children because of no license. And three, I was so far away from everyone. Even though I wasn't alone there because I had family, in my head it was the most alone I had ever been in my life. My depression was the worst it had ever been. It was a few days after last Christmas where I decided to commit suicide. I wasn't welcome at my house for Christmas, and that was the last nail in the coffin. I had my plan. I bought my kids Christmas presents and had them wrapped on my bed in my uncle's house, along with a suicide note to my aunt and uncle and a separate note addressed to my family. I got obliterated drunk so I wouldn't wussy out. I made the usual walk to the LCBO down the street, and when I saw the bus that came down that street the same time every day, I was ready. When it got to me, I jumped in front of it. Everything went white for a second, and when I opened my eyes in a split second, I was on the ground and the bus had just grazed my shoes. I looked beside me and there was a fair-sized rock beside my feet that was never there before. This was a very smooth walkway that I had taken day and night, and this rock had never been there before. In an instant, the bus kept driving, not seeing what had happened. For a few moments, I just lay there thinking. This is when I knew that rock was put there for a reason. God, I decided it was not my time to go. I quickly rushed home in agony, ripped up the suicide letters, called up my aunt and uncle, and said I was 100% finally ready to attend Teen Challenge. And a few weeks later, I arrived there. Nobody outside of that place knows about my suicide attempt, not even my family. I entered Teen Challenge on the 24th of January, and this month marks me being 8 months sober, and I plan on never drinking again. It's brought nothing but pain, agony, massive depression, guilt, and immense shame to myself and my family. Even though I sometimes struggle here with my connection with God, I know that it is the safest place for me to be, and God has fully accepted me as a child of Christ. I am now a grateful follower of Jesus Christ even more, as he has saved my life. God has shown me that it's okay to be sober and to go through tough times, because it would only make you stronger on the other side. He has helped me stay sober and has also shown me that he can do anything for you. You just have to fully submit yourself to him and truly believe. I'm also learning to be patient, which is something that I've never been able to be in my life. I've always expected results now. I'm learning to be a good Christian and everything about Christianity, as I was not a Christian before I entered this place. And sometimes that can be very hard for me. But you are never too old to learn, and there's always something new to learn about Christianity and new to learn from the Bible. Even though my wife Jess and I will not be getting back together after I graduate Teen Challenge, God has allowed me to see my children again, and having God in my life has mended the relationship with my children, the father-son and daughter relationship I've always wanted. Though it is still a work in progress, it can only go up from this point. If it wasn't for this place, who knows where I would be, or if I would even be able to see my children again. I would probably be back in jail or dead. I would have to honestly say some of the biggest highlights for me in the program is first and foremost being able to stay sober with God right by my side every time that I need him. And secondly would be the new friendships that I've made during this time that I've been there. I've also had some very deep conversations with some of the guys here, and they have helped me in more ways than they know. In the future, not if I graduate, but when I do graduate, I will follow the Lord Jesus Christ. I will also be going back to work welding and building high-rises, using the keys that I've learned here from Christ to stay sober and live a long, happy, sober lifetime. Two of the scriptures that I've noticed that have helped me when I'm going through a tough time are Hebrews 10:35, so do not throw away your confidence, for it will be richly rewarded, and Acts 16:10, believe in the Lord and you will be saved, you and your household. Thanks.
So how are we doing for time? We're good?
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Jason Buckley, but my friends have usually called me Buck or just Buckley. But that wasn't the case when I was younger. Loser, idiot, retard were many of the other extremely harsh names for a child that I was called throughout my younger school years. Even though I wasn't the smartest kid in school, I always tried what I thought was my best. Growing up, I had what I thought was a pretty decent childhood. Always playing sports, brand new equipment every year, growing up with two cottages, but hockey is what I excelled at the most. All in all, we looked like a happy family, my mom, dad, younger brother, and I, but that was not the case at all. All I remember is my parents never getting along, never doing stuff together as a family, always with one parent or the other, and they were always fighting. Little did I know that this would be the start of their very rocky, long-proceeded, extremely tense divorce. And while this was all happening in their world, they had absolutely no clue what was going on in my horrible, dark world. From the ages of 6 to 15, I was sexually abused and molested by my first friend that I had ever made in the subdivision we lived in by a disgusting person. At such a young age, I didn't know right from wrong, so I didn't know what to do and never told anyone because I felt no one would believe me. Who's going to believe a 6-year-old about that happening to them, was what I always thought to myself over and over. This is also the reason why I started getting sexually active with girls at a very young age, 7 and 8 to be exact, which is when I lost my virginity to a girl that lived across the street. She was also from a very difficult home, and sometimes her mom and her would come over to our house to get away from their very abusive husband and spend nights there for safety. And the weird thing was that she was always the one to initiate it with me. This is stuff no child should be doing at such a young age like that, but it happened. I was craving my mother's love so much throughout all this turmoil and never getting it, and so was the girl across the street from her mother, but never getting it, that we would always hang out and have sex at a young age, and then finally with my first true girlfriend in grade 6. During my teen years, I took hockey pretty seriously, but the memories would always come back. I made the Oakville Rangers AA team and was a call-up player for the AAA team as well. I was playing with future NHL stars and didn't even know it, people like Sam Gagne and Jonathan Tavares. But I was also playing with my abuser. The more I tried to ignore the fact that I knew what would happen after these hockey games and practices, I finally exploded. I quit playing hockey on both teams. It was ripping me up inside, and the coaches from both teams knew something was up, but again, I couldn't bring myself the embarrassment to tell the truth. My hockey career was destroyed by one person. I still haven't been able to forgive him, and I can't right now in my life either. Maybe later on. In high school, my teen years, they were pretty much okay. I attended Oakville Trafalgar High School in Oakville. I wasn't the popular kid, but I also wasn't the unpopular kid. I was one of the drug dealing kids, or always with some sort of dealer. I actually attended a fair amount of classes, but skipped many more. I always had friends in a bunch of different crews, so I associated with an array of different people, guys and girls. But there was one thing. My abuser attended the same school and was lurking around the corners. So I started smoking weed, as everyone did in my school, to forget my past. I had first tried it in grade 6 and 7, but stopped. Started back up in high school. I was the usual rebellious teenager, selling drugs, stealing my mom's car at night, getting suspended from school and school trips, and always getting into trouble. Every chance I got to rebel against something, I would. Little did I know, the drinking that I had started to do every weekend was the start of my downfall of life. I didn't really start drinking heavy until I went with my two best friends and this family to a trip to Trinidad. We spent 2 months down there traveling the small islands of Trinidad and Tobago with friends and family. When I got back, that's when cocaine really came into my life. I left the house living with my mom and moved in with my then girlfriend to our apartment. And that apartment was a straight up liquor and cocaine den. The next 2 years of my life were totally wasted. A daily repeat of drugs, work, and alcohol. She would then leave and disappear for weeks at a time with other guys, and again, I would be stuck in my lonely despair, looking after the bills in the apartment. She would later leave me for a 19-year-old drug dealer, and a few years later, I found out that she had a child and quickly overdosed and died after that. Before coming to Teen Challenge, my life was a bit all over the place. When I got back from working out west on the pipelines in northern British Columbia, we had purchased a house in Hamilton, Ontario, and had our first beautiful baby girl. We named her Isla Jane Buckley. I had a very well-paying union job welding precast buildings and high-rises, but one thing was always lingering over my head, my past. If that had happened to me at such a young age, couldn't it happen to my beautiful baby girl? So I started drinking again, but much more this time. I would start off by hiding the beers in the basement, nursing my three beers upstairs all night. Every time I'd go to the basement to do whatever I had to do down there, I'd pound back a few and come back up. My wife had no clue what was going on or how bad my addiction had become. But I would still be hiding and drinking beer in the basement. Then I started drinking at work. My end of days was near and I didn't even know it. I thought I was okay, but my home life soon deteriorated. After drinking beer at work all day long, I would come home angry, impatient with life, and my depression kicked in with no end in sight. It was affecting everything in my life in every way possible. And for the most part, I was lying, mentally cheating with other women, and the one thing that hits me the most was I wasn't a good father or a true father to my beautiful daughter. I love her to the moon and back, but when I was at home with her, I wasn't really at home. I was in my own little world, always thinking about alcohol. This went on for years, and I finally made the surprise decision to my wife to transfer from my local union in Hamilton to the local union in London. I figured it would be there in London that everything would change and would be a fresh start for me. I couldn't have been more wrong. After the birth of my beautiful boy, Watson, my drinking had totally become out of control. I was making God's amount of money welding and building the Amazon warehouse in St. Thomas, but also drinking 25 to 30 tall boys a day at work. Nobody knew a thing because I had it down to a science. It was when I got my first DUI, everything came out into the open, to my family at home and my extended family in Hamilton. I attended Alcoholics Anonymous for a few months, but never really found it that helpful. When I got my license back 3 months later, I was working in Kitchener building another high-rise when my life came crashing down before my eyes. I got my second DUI. My wife didn't know who I was anymore, and neither did I. Everything was a lie to her in our world. I wasn't the same Jason as I was when we got married. I was a terrible, lying, conniving, secretive, depressed Jason she never wanted to see again. This is when I had hit my lowest rock bottom ever in my life. I lost my job, my wife, my kids, and my house. I had nowhere to go and no one wanted anything to do with me. The suicidal thoughts in my head were raging. I felt worthless, like absolutely nothing. No one wanted me and no one loved me, and I couldn't see my precious kids. I started to self-harm severely and figured if I was dead, everything and everyone would be happy I was gone. No more having to worry about Jason. I'd ruined everything in my life, and if I died, everyone would be set free. After I got kicked out of my mom's house, my gracious aunt and uncle took me under their wing and let me move with them up in Keswick. They're a beautiful Christian family and very godly people. He's also the one who told me about Teen Challenge, as he worked at the Women's Center in Aurora for 16 years. I kept declining. My drinking also took off there more because, one, there was an LCBO not even a 5-minute walk from the house. Two, I wasn't allowed to see my children because of no license. And three, I was so far away from everyone. Even though I wasn't alone there because I had family, in my head it was the most alone I had ever been in my life. My depression was the worst it had ever been. It was a few days after last Christmas where I decided to commit suicide. I wasn't welcome at my house for Christmas, and that was the last nail in the coffin. I had my plan. I bought my kids Christmas presents and had them wrapped on my bed in my uncle's house, along with a suicide note to my aunt and uncle and a separate note addressed to my family. I got obliterated drunk so I wouldn't wussy out. I made the usual walk to the LCBO down the street, and when I saw the bus that came down that street the same time every day, I was ready. When it got to me, I jumped in front of it. Everything went white for a second, and when I opened my eyes in a split second, I was on the ground and the bus had just grazed my shoes. I looked beside me, and there was a fair-sized rock beside my feet that was never there before. This was a very smooth walkway that I had taken day and night, and this rock had never been there before. In an instant, the bus kept driving, not seeing what had happened. For a few moments, I just lay there thinking. This is when I knew that rock was put there for a reason. God, I decided it was not my time to go. I quickly rushed home in agony, ripped up the suicide letters, called up my aunt and uncle, and said I was 100% finally ready to attend Teen Challenge. And a few weeks later, I arrived there. Nobody outside of that place knows about my suicide attempt, not even my family. I entered Teen Challenge on the 24th of January, and this month marks me being 8 months sober, and I plan on never drinking again. It's brought nothing but pain, agony, massive depression, guilt, and immense shame to myself and my family. Even though I sometimes struggle here with my connection with God, I know that is the safest place for me to be, and God has fully accepted me as a child of Christ. I am now a grateful follower of Jesus Christ even more, as he has saved my life. God has shown me that it's okay to be sober and to go through tough times, because it will only make you stronger on the other side. He has helped me stay sober and has also shown me that he can do anything for you. You just have to fully submit yourself to him and truly believe. I'm also learning to be patient, which is something that I've never been able to be in my life. I've always expected results now. I'm learning to be a good Christian and everything about Christianity, as I was not a Christian before I entered this place. And sometimes that can be very hard for me. But you are never too old to learn, and there's always something new to learn about Christianity and new to learn from the Bible. Even though my wife Jess and I will not be getting back together after I graduate Teen Challenge, God has allowed me to see my children again, and having God in my life has mended the relationship with my children, the father, son, and daughter relationship I've always wanted. Though it is still a work in progress, it can only go up from this point. If it wasn't for this place, who knows where I would be, or if I would even be able to see my children again. I would probably be back in jail or dead. I would have to honestly say some of the biggest highlights for me in the program is first and foremost being able to stay sober with God right by my side every time that I need him. And secondly would be the new friendships that I've made during this time that I've been there. I've also had some very deep conversations with some of the guys here, and they have helped me in more ways than they know. In the future, not if I graduate, but when I do graduate, I will follow the Lord Jesus Christ. I will also be going back to work welding and building high-rises, using the keys that I've learned here from Christ to stay sober and live a long, happy, sober lifetime. Two of the scriptures that I've noticed that have helped me when I'm going through a tough time are Hebrews 10:35, so do not throw away your confidence, for it will be richly rewarded, and Acts 16:10, believe in the Lord and you will be saved, you and your household. Thanks.